Episode 158.
Woo!
There we go. Someone else has to come in because we are without our fearless leader. And you guys have been without an episode for, I don't know, what has it been, 2-3 years? Is that right?
It's
feels
been a
like,
while.
Feels like 7 years. There we go.
I came in and for your clone over there.
That's right. Yeah, we got a special guest, no longer from Foggy London Town. Nope. But we got Patrick sporting a very fancy t-shirt.
From the Hulk, Hulk the Ride, the best roller coaster in Universal Studios.
Oh.
Is it still right now, or is it was at the time that t-shirt was made?
Oh, it was still, I mean, I went, when I went before Jeff's wedding, that's the only one I wrote. I wrote it like 18 times. It was the best one.
Cool stuff. Cool stuff. And also I got to say, this is beyond t-shirts, which is a very exciting development. I feel like there's been like a lot of big news with you guys. Like this may as well not be Submersion. I feel like this is like Housecast now.
Oh, wow. Because
Brom, are you moved in?
You've been paying attention to our chat feed. I'm rocking it tonight. I got my Columbus Blue Jackets hoodie on, brand new. It had to be done. It's official. I'm a homeowner.
All right. The abode. Is it humble?
It's a humble abode, yes. It's the perfect size for me.
I don't think so.
I will say the backyard, though. The backyard, I definitely splurged a little bit. The backyard is very nice. It's a little piece of heaven out there.
Humble abode, bragging, or how would you say it? Not so humble backyard. What would be the term?
A luxurious
arrogant. Audacious?
Arrogant.
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 There
it is.
Go.
It is.
And you're not the only one, because Patrick.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah. So I'm in this is my office / guest room. No one else can see it. It's a podcast. Good podcasting. But the, bought our house, did a full renovation, everything top to bottom, electric, plumbing, everything, and just moved in like a month and a half ago. And yeah, right where we want it to be. But yeah, ours is the tiny house on the block. That's like, it was literally described as surrounded by significant homes. That was its description on the real estate sites. And we were like, perfect.
Surrounded by arrogant homes.
There are some audacious real estate around here. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, very good. I mentioned a clone earlier. I had a trivia night this week. It was Tuesday night. We had a trivia question. Do you guys know the name of the sheep, the first clone sheep?
Dolly.
Oh, wow. Fortunately, one of my teammates knew, because I was ready to go with George Clooney.
Nice. Oh, very good. Yeah, that's good. So is all your trivia answers basically names of trivia teams rather than actual answers?
Exactly. My hope being, if I get it wrong, at least one of these, maybe the trivia wizard will actually like appreciate the joke and give me like partial credit.
I think they'd probably do that like once and maybe twice, but the third time, you're not getting any more credit.
Well, until I get that first one, I'm going to keep doing it.
There we go.
Occasionally, the USS Wet Floater encounters mysteries even deeper than it can explore. In cases such as these, a crack team of experts board our submersible and plumb the deepest depths of submarine pop culture. This is Mackie's Second Floor Studio Presents Submersion, a submersible pod.
All right. Well, just to kind of set the stage for what we talk here, I mean, we don't have our fearless leader, Kyle, for this one. And why would that be? Well, this is not a regular episode. This is going to be one of our submersible pods, and we're going to be diving deep, you know, scientific excursion to a little show called. Wait, I should actually let someone else say this. Brom, what show did we watch?
Well, you jagoffs, we watched Jag episode 2.
Yeah, I was very excited for this. It's a little confusing for people who are following along and want to actually watch everything that we watch. Sometimes it's called episode 3. I would say it's almost definitely episode 2.
Yeah.
You know, the first episode is an hour or like 2 hours long, basically a movie or whatever, you know, to introduce all the characters and stuff like that, and some characters that you don't even need to know because they disappear. But then they go into the real first episode, the regular sized episode, which is a full-on submarine episode. You'd think, wow, you must have so many JAG episodes, you know, ready and raring to go. It's like, no, they really didn't return and do too many submarine episodes. So this is a
interesting.
This is a pretty great one to start off a series. Kind of interesting submarine episode as well. So that's kind of that. And I was excited. I don't know, Patrick, you're like an old man who watches old man stuff. Had you ever watched any JAG episodes?
No. So I popped on. We watched about 9 seasons of NCIS, which is the spinoff series of JAG. But I'd never really seen JAG. And then, but then I was watching it, and then my mother-in-law, this is back when I was living with my in-laws, and she was like, oh, I've watched all of JAG. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. So, but yeah, no, they're very similar, except, yeah, well, I guess we can get into it at some point, but it's very funny because between the first episode and the second episode, there's some significant cast changes in terms of even his like assistant changes, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And then later and on, that same woman who's in the second episode also leaves after the first season because they changed networks after the first season. So it's like a whole mess to start that series off. Like, it was doing terribly in the ratings, and it only really kind of kicked off a few years later.
So, yeah, and put me in the camp that would have assumed there would be more submarine episodes.
Expensive,
yeah,
expensive, right? You have to get the set and wander around the set.
Yeah, so to clarify, we watched Shadow is the name of our episode.
Shadow.
And it would be listed as episode 3 on IMDb, but if you want to watch along with us, pull it up on Amazon. It was episode 2 on Amazon.
Yeah, and if you got Paramount Plus, if you're a true oldie, old person at heart, pull up your Paramount Plus and or CBS, whatever. And you'll probably be able to get it free on that, because, you know, that whole thing is built for old people. So they have things like JAG available. What did I want to say? I wanted to say something else before we kind of jumped into some of this stuff. But now I'm forgetting because, you know, we're kind of really straightforward on JAG.
Was it maybe Halloween related?
It was not Halloween related. It was basically just saying beyond just the sets, you know, that you kind of also have to do some amount of special effects when you do a submarine episode. Whereas if you just kind of throw someone into an office, you don't really have to do that. You have to be underwater. You have to at least set the stage. You can't just be like, I'm now on a submarine and walk around some like a basement.
Expendables 4 would disagree with you. Like, you can just put things in wide hallways and call it a tanker ship and you're good to go.
If only that had a submarine, we could Patrick watch that for, I don't know, Brahms, do you know we have a website? It's called badmovietwins.com.
I don't know. I don't think I've heard of that.
Well, that's badmovietwins.com. And we went to theaters and we saw an upcoming, you know, actual submersion episode. We'll cover one of the movies we saw in theaters, but then we ended up watching Expendables 4, which is truly an atrocity that no one should watch. So we can kind of just skip over that one when it comes to it.
Yeah, all right. Well,
should we get into it?
Yeah.
Let's dive in.
All right. I'm going to do a brief recap of the first episode or the supersized first episode. We don't have to say too much other than it was kind of setting the stage of who, you know, Harmon Rabb is, Harmon Rabb Jr., played by David James Elliott. He is a JAG officer, which is basically the lawyers of the Navy. There has been a murder so foul, is that the term, on an aircraft carrier. A woman who is kind of questioning whether she can kind of cut it as a fighter pilot. They've kind of have this whole thing where they have women in the Navy doing fighter pilot shit, Top Gun stuff.
She's a radio intelligence officer, I think.
Yeah, and so she's out
in
there.
The
and
back
she's
of the
right
fighter.
Yeah, she's basically the goose of the situation, They end up getting kind of into an altercation, which is nuts. And all these things are so crazy that they actually end up like, you know, ending up having to like blow up another, you know, thing would be quite a big deal, I think, in reality. But instead they just do it all the time in TV shows and movies, but end up getting, you know, in an altercation with another country's military. She is quite nervous about having done this, but the commander who's kind of in charge of it, who's played by Missy Locke, I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head, Terry O'Quinn.
Terry O'Quinn, yeah. Locke from Lost. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, and he is he's basically kind of trying to show her that she can't cut it. He definitely runs, you know, by his gut or whatever. And so this is kind of setting the stage. She, you know, is thinking of resigning. She's kind of deciding against it. She ends up having a liaison, a rendezvous with a love on the boat, which obviously is forbidden. You're not going to have the people on the boat consorting or whatever. And on her way back, you know, she gets, you know, pushed off the boat and killed. And so that's how we end up getting Harmon Rabb Jr. called in. They basically want this cleaned up. It's looking not good. Obviously, it's kind of a big deal to have women in the Navy flying fighter jets. And they, you know, now one has been murdered. And so they want it actually kind of just like cleaned up as being an accident. Oh, she fell off the boat. But in comes Harmon Rabb Jr. They want someone who's kind of, they kind of bring him in because he's, I don't know what, like young, on the younger side of things, or inexperienced, or maybe it's just, is the partner supposed to be inexperienced? There's some reason why they have this, you know, he's sent along with a woman who's much more his junior, and they've never worked together. Or maybe it's because he's a fighter pilot.
They wanted her to be easy on the eyes.
Yeah, they wanted, yeah. It was because of What's-His-Face, the famous actor that was playing a clarinet later in the episode. Mm-hmm. He's like,
Kevin Dunn.
We really need some good PR here. Because this is going to be a really touch and go situation with a woman being potentially, you know, having an accident, basically one of the first women, like Navy pilots. And so that's what they want to send, someone who's going to be like easy on the eyes and like not harm, because harm is not easy on the eyes, even though he is. And he's kind of abrasive, I think is what the indication is, that he's going to be kind of like annoy. He's going to annoy people.
Right. So, and so he's got this whole background. He basically was a fighter pilot, but he ended up having issues with his eyes, which are, you know, essentially he has, you know, an inability or some kind of vertigo or something that happens when he's trying to land his plane or whatever. So he had to basically quit being a fighter pilot. And it's kind of embarrassing. He like gets there and people are kind of making fun of him because there's like former colleagues of him. His, you know, still on the carrier. But, you know, and he, you know, he seems like kind of put out by the whole situation. He doesn't want to talk about it. The person, the woman who's with him wants to talk about it. He's like, no, thanks. Anyways, I'll just kind of skip forwards. You know, you learn some things. There's a guy who's kind of sweet on the, who was sweet on the woman, or the woman who was murdered. And we find out that yes, he was the one who ended up, you know, having a relationship with her. It was, him that, she was going to see. He was trying to convince her to not resign, even though she had kind of written up this, letter. She also had a roommate who was kind of this jacked lady who was a Rio that was, or a woman fighter. Yeah, who was kind of successful. It's kind of the alternate version of the woman. She was, you know, beating all the guys and all that. And then I find it kind of interesting that ultimately the conclusion, if I'm remembering correctly, it's been a little while since I watched this episode, was that the person you would think would be the murderer is the murderer, right?
Right.
That's kind of how it played out. Yeah. Which I found kind of interesting. I thought for sure there'd be a twist, like it would turn out to be the other woman who felt like, you know, this woman was going to give women a bad name in the Navy or something, or maybe, you know, the person who was sweet on her, you know, ended up having some altercation with her when it found out she was having an affair with another person or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah,
the twist ended up
being like on the bad guy himself. Like it ends up being the guy that plays Glenn Guglia from The Wedding Singer, the bad guy from The Wedding Singer. He ends up pushing the female fighter pilot out of like kind of like a jealous rage. Like he doesn't like that, you know, again, women are becoming, you know, fighter pilots and on ships and stuff like that. So he gets in all these spats and he's always getting outlifted in the weight room by this chick. And he sees the girl that died wearing the fighter pilot's jacket, and he confuses them in the darkness and he shoves her off the boat there. So the twist ends up being on him, and that's how you find out that he was the murderer. He got confused and made a mistake. I mean, obviously killing anybody is a tragic mistake, but that was kind of the twist.
And so, of course, we have I actually thought this, I don't know if we're not going to actually rate this episode or whatever, since it didn't have any submarines in it, but I thought it was actually quite good. It was almost like a movie. Other than it being pretty down the line, it was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, well, if you didn't know, back in the 90s, this is how they made these things. They were movies. So you'd make these TV movies. That's what the pilot was a TV movie. And if your pilot was unsuccessful, they would still play it, but it would be a TV movie. So it would have been JAG, the TV movie, and you'd see it listed as a TV movie on the listings. And it was similar, like, there's one with, like, a robot dog I watched one time, and that's what it was. It was a failed pilot, but it was supposed to be like this series with a guy gets a robot dog. The robot dog's played by a German Shepherd. It's a real dog, but they claim it's like a $6 million man situation. It's just
robotic. Gotcha. That's funny. I ended up liking that episode too.
I thought the woman in it was much better. Catherine Bell, I think, was the woman in the.
Yeah, she definitely brought a different vibe. I think all three of them end up bringing a different vibe to the show.
Yeah.
All very, you know, attractive and whatnot, which is what they're going for, obviously. But they all definitely bring a different personality to the show.
Yeah, I did want to mention quickly, briefly, that also there's this whole storyline that Harmon also gets to fly a plane and land it successfully.
Which
is kind of an odd aspect of the
but he has the same thing.
Investigation.
He still gets the weird thing in his eye when it's only when it's dark. If it in darkness, he gets like a weird vertigo. Like he basically goes blind while trying to fly a plane.
So, but he's able to land it, and then he's still. They're like, "Oh, so you landed the plane?" And he pretty much is like, "Yeah, but I can't do that." It's the end of that.
He saves. He saves Cag, again, right. The guy played by John Locke.
All right. So, getting into Shadow now, you brace yourselves, guys, because this one was a doozy. I sure did like it, and it opened up with a bang. And by with a bang, I mean with one of the craziest openings to an episode I've ever goddamn seen. Because we have Harmon Rabb, he's jogging along, he's just like out for a stroll, no big deal. Oh, he looks over, there's a helicopter landing. He's like basically. Well, he's getting water or whatever, and it seems to be that the helicopter's landing for President Bill Clinton, who's running along in stock footage. And so Harmon's like, oh, look, there's Bill Clinton. I guess that's a helicopter for him. And it's like, then the helicopter opens, and they're like, no, it's you. And he's like, what? Me? And then he runs over there, and they have this crazy – I mean, I got to say, the craziest part was them doing the green screen with like the little helicopter window.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be that like basically Bill Clinton's like waving at him or whatever.
Waving goodbye. They use the same wave. It's just they're milking this 3-second clip. And I think they know that they're in on it. Like it is so funny.
Yeah, you can tell it was a shot taken from a car. And he's like waving into the window of a car. Like you can even see like the window of the car. And you're supposed to think it's a helicopter. It's absurd. Looks terrible.
Yeah, it looks terrible. And that's the thing. You go from this first 2-hour, you know, movie, basically, into the first episode of the series, and you're like, wait, what has happened here? And then they continue to kind of like ramp it up, because immediately they're like, oh yeah, that Kevin Dunn, he's gone. Who's in charge of it? It's the kind of lame person. Why is he in charge of it? Because we want someone who's going to be a scapegoat. You know, where did Harmon Rabb's, you know, partner go? Who gives a shit? He's got a new partner. It's named Meg Austin, and she's a computer whiz, which was the other person was also a computer whiz.
I almost wish like, they wouldn't have even referenced any of these past people and just basically started up doing what they wanted to do with the show, but just start over kind of deal.
Yeah. None of it mattered. And ultimately it's like,
but they still spent a few minutes like talking about like what happened and giving like fleshing out like what happened to these other characters. I'm like that doesn't matter.
It is hard because Harmon and the other lady had a real connection. I felt like they were going to make it in the end. You know, they smooch at the end of the first, I can't even remember.
No, they got really close.
Yeah. They were like they were flirting pretty hard.
I think Jag is one of those shows where, I think they have like the will they won't they for like ever. Like he basically doesn't.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't, right? Like, because I was reading up on the character. I don't think he ever gets married, which is really shocking given the fact that like almost immediately he's like hardcore flirting with every person around him. He's committing. I mean, he's got some HR violations going left and right on these guys. And so,
I mean, that's Jag's MO. That's Jag's MO. Have you ever seen NCIS? Gibbs smacks his subordinates all the time. He physically hits them. It's insane.
I thought you were gonna say they smack their ass or something. I was like, oh
no, he hits them over the head. It's like a father son relationship with Donoso. It's like a whole thing. Donoso, on the other hand, actually does like, you know, what's the word? Sexually harass every single female employee that he comes into contact with. So yeah, NCIS is not a good look. Jag is like a little bit better.
But this isn't that. This is Jag, Harmon Rabb Jr. He's a gentleman, although one that does get quite close to the ladies that he's like physically, you know, very, very physically close to the woman he's working with, which would make me uncomfortable. But anyways, he's got a new partner, Meg Austin. She's also a computer whiz. The last one was also a computer whiz. It's like they just made the same character, but put someone else in the role. And they're basically informed that something has happened. And what we see has happened is that there was a submarine, Los Angeles class submarine. In an absurd scenario, they have a civilian who is basically the tech supervisor of this like test, this weapons test, Dirk Grover. And Dirk Grover is in charge of basically testing out this new targeting system for torpedoes. And it's all set up where the submarine, for some reason, the people in the Navy have no control over it. He's like, they basically just like get out there. They say, okay, you send out this torpedo. The idea is the computer controls it and it's able to stop and kind of turn. They're able to control it almost like a remote control car or whatever. And he's like, great, I'll do it. But you can see he's kind of dastardly. He's also a total weirdo, which is awesome. That's the best part of this entire episode is the fact that Dirk Grover, played by Ryan Hurst, who you know as Gary from Remember the Titans, is off the chains. Like one of the craziest. He is who is the poem spewing guy that we, you know, loved in the other.
Oh man. What's his name?
Lukash. Lukash. Yeah, so Lukash. He's basically the Lukash. He is Lukash. And not quite. I was going to say he's like Lukash of steroids. That's not true. Lukash is like Dirk Grover on steroids.
Yeah.
But Dirk Grover is he's kind of like a tiny little Lukash for us to like hold.
And it's love. TV. It's TV Lukash.
Yeah, TV Lukash. And he is awesome. Just like so funny, so ridiculous. Everything is nuts. And you just got to look at, you got to admire the fact that this guy was pretty young and they were just like, go for it. And he's like, don't mind if I do. And was chewing the scenery. For the entire episode or whatever. So anyways, he sends out the thing, but you can tell he's dastardly, and immediately he's like, ha, 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 you idiots. And he's very arrogant, much like your backyard, Brian.
He's doing that like m'lady nerd kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's honestly, he's so good at it that he's like, I feel like that's who he was in real life.
Yeah, it's pretty disturbing. It's like, Harm, you must call me sir. But Malini, yep. Basically.
Is someone going to do this iconic pun, his quote?
I can try it out. Let me, one second. I got to loosen up a little bit. Basically, he goes, but they don't have to know they were ever in harm's way.
And that's pretty good.
And yeah, and then because his name is Harm. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. You're dismissed, sir. So he says.
And so he's basically like, you guys all are idiots. I'm the smartest man alive. And I have sent this torpedo out to track a cruise ship. And you don't know what cruise ship it is, but it's following behind it. And that's how, you know, I'm going to explode it if you don't give me, you know, money and a escape to Cuba or whatever he had all set up the whole trap to be. And so Harm and Meg Austin are sent out to more or less negotiate. They're given clear instructions that they are not going to be trying to stop this guy because they can't have this cruise ship blow up. They are really just negotiating a way in which to get him the money, you know, in some ways. Like, it's just like, don't worry about it. We just don't want a disaster is kind of how things are going. And so, but they're, you know, Harm and the other woman are kind of sort of being like, we'll see what we can do. You know, so they get there and they're talking to him. You know, Dirk Grover. Dirk Grover's being amazing, and I love him. And the whole time, they're trying to figure out how this is all working. And Meg Austin, being the computer expert, is like, there is no effing way this guy has actual control of this torpedo. That almost certainly it was some kind of pre-programmed tracking of a cruise ship, and that he can only explode it if they are close enough to the torpedo. You know, otherwise, there's just no way that he has, from his little laptop, has the ability to do this. And Dirk Grover keeps on saying, no, 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 and I'll prove it. If you try anything, I'll explode something on the ship. I'll show you that I have remote control access to explosives. And so they kind of test him, or he wants to prove something, and he kind of sets one off. And it floods a compartment. They're able to stop the flooding. But like, he's basically like, see, and I could sink the submarine. I can blow up that torpedo. Don't even worry. But Meg, she's skeptical. She's like, there's still no way. Like, technically speaking, there is no way his little laptop has the ability to do this. But they also don't totally understand how he has control of these explosives either. So they're just very wary of what to do here. In the end, I think they kind of fill a bunch of time here with Meg. She kind of has she's afraid of enclosed spaces,
claustrophobia,
and they feel some other stuff with the submarine skipper, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, being a major star, shows up as a weapons expert And they're kind of talking with him a little bit. He gives some hints, some more hints about what could be going on and how these things kind of work.
I was kind of shipping him and Harmon Rab, man.
Oh, they think so?
They had some chemistry, yeah.
Some slash fic, because that's in the
yeah. Jeffrey Dean Morgan's got, he's got chemistry with everyone. He's just got that slow. He is amazing. But yeah, so they kind of just fill up a bunch of time here because Dirk Grover's kind of like, he just kind of chews the scenery for a while, and Meg is basically like, you know, let me try to get on his good side, because if I can get any closer to his computer, then I'm going to be able to at least see something of how things are going on. And so, what is it? She goes to Dirk Grover and's basically like, I don't feel well. I'm like, you know, have claustrophobia or whatever. And he starts to, you know, be a little bit at least sympathetic to her. And it's like, okay, well, you know, we could play games on my computer. Or maybe she suggests it. She's like, do you have any games on my computer? And he's like, yeah. And so they're playing some games on the computer. And she's trying to glean from the computer whether there's any way, because they just don't want to make any move if it actually is true that he has control of the tribunal. I actually kind of appreciated this aspect of it too, because it's kind of like her, a single person, being like, there's just no way, technically speaking, I'm a computer expert, it's not possible, blah, blah, blah. But all the other people who aren't computer experts are kind of sitting there being like, we can't trust just your judgment. You need to have more proof for us, or else we just can't risk this. So we're going to negotiate and do this. And what else are they doing? They're kind of, I guess, Brahm, you recently, was there other stuff they were doing? I know they were trying to like pin down where the cruise ship was.
That
was
one thing they're trying to figure out the area to go to.
They do some mapping, and they miss some very obvious things. They even say like, wow, why didn't I think of that? It's just like some very obvious stuff, like the rate of speed, like combined with the amount of time that's passed, you should have a range of how far this missile could at its most be.
Yeah. They kind of narrow it down and they start heading towards the most likely, you know, cruise ship, which they eventually prove is the one that has the torpedo.
What confuses me, and maybe they answered it somewhere in the episode, is why didn't they just like bring all of the cruise ships into port and just disembark everybody?
They didn't want to freak people out, right? Isn't that the idea? Yeah. They were trying to keep it all very, very quiet, so no one.
And I think they don't want to antagonize Dirk Grover either. Like, I think part of it's like he's using this as a tool. So if they start to whatever, he implies he has collaborators and stuff like that. This is actually one thing I felt like wasn't really resolved by the episode either, which is he has all these explosives around. Eventually, they figure out something about that, which we'll talk about. But he has these things; they're installed in the ship. As they kind of explore the first one, he explodes and where it was exploded from, they realize that it must have been put into the submarine during construction. Like there's like no way that it could be like added to the thing or whatever, which seems crazy because they never really resolve like what that means. Presumably eventually they flip Dirk and they're able to like figure out who this is, but it does seem he is correct. He has a larger conspiracy. It's not just him. But like I was kind of waiting for it to be someone on the boat, that there was someone on the submarine. Yeah,
that's right.
Him.
I don't remember them resolving that. I don't know if it was just part of him being like a defense contractor, that he had some other contacts that were able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he implied there were other people involved, and that I think they were probably worried that if they started doing stuff with the cruise ships, he would explode the cruise ship or something. They were just kind of like keeping things. They were keeping things static because the only reason Harmon was there was to negotiate with them. Basically figure out, okay, this is where you're going to get your money. This is where you're going to get your, you know, this is, you're going to get to Cuba. We got transport for you, all that kind of stuff. He was just a negotiator for that. So they're just like keeping things steady while they get Dirk, you know, off the boat or whatever. Eventually, Meg finds out from playing with the computer that she's right. She has hard proof. There is no way he can actually explode the torpedo from there. And so they grab the computer. Basically, they subdue him, grab the computer, and lock him in his compartment. And they start to try to figure out, okay, how can we disengage the torpedo? And he has this whole thing set up where she can do a certain number or whatever. She can try to stop it, but he's got all these traps and set, you know, things to stop people from disengaging without putting in a code. You have to put in a code, his code, or else it's not going to happen. They've also now made their way, you know, pretty close to the cruise ship. And so they can kind of sense the torpedo or whatever. They kind of know where it is as well. And so they're kind of looking through it. And she says there's like a countdown as well, that at some point it's going to just assume something's gone wrong and the torpedo will go and blow up the cruise ship. And Meg does the calculation in her head. It's basically like, I'm not going to be able to crack this in time. It's not possible for me to like get through his defenses before we, you know, have this going on. But Harm at the same time has looked at the map of the submarine and it's basically like, yo, we've been operating under the assumption that Dirk keeps on saying he's willing to die. We assume that part of this will be that he will let the cruise ship blow up and he'll blow up the submarine, you know, if he doesn't get his money, so we have to pay him. But look at where these different bombs are, because she's able to see on the, she figures out on the computer where the bombs are and she can kind of like stop them from exploding at this point. He maps them all out, all these bombs that have been installed in the boat, and says, he doesn't want to die. Look at where they are. And they're all places that they were able to close off really quickly. But there's nothing in the middle of the submarine or anywhere that would compromise the boat in any way. It's just to scare them, basically, and make it seem like he wants to die. And so they come up with this whole scheme now. They're like, okay, we're not going to be able to break into his computer and stop this. But he doesn't want to die. And so they bring him out, and they're basically like, we crack your code, bruh. And Dirk's like, what? No way. And they're like, yeah, we did. And they're like, see? And they click the thing in, and they have this whole thing. And it looks like, oh my God, the they did it wrong. The torpedo's coming back at them. And Dirk's like, no. You can't have the thing coming back at us. And they're like, we are. Oh my God, we're going to do it. We're going to all die. And he's like, quickly, type in this code. And they type in his code. And they're like, what a goddamn idiot. And they're like, you're just like a total idiot. And he's like, oh no. And they basically have tricked him into thinking they had control. It was all a simulation that they apparently mocked up in 5 seconds. And they're all professional actors at this point. And he gave them the code, even though they had no idea. So then they disengage the torpedo. Everyone high fives. And Harmon Rab has won again. And for the first time. And then at the end, Bill Clinton comes in from, you know, they surface and Bill Clinton dives. He comes into the submarine and plays saxophone for a while. It's like the end of the
episode. My fellow Americans.
Yeah. That's my new thing. That's my, you know, I used to have a different shtick on this podcast.
The shtick that will not be mentioned.
Yeah, no, the shtick is now that Bill Clinton always comes in and plays saxophone during one scene of the episode.
Jamie, yes. Are you going woke like 6 years into the show now?
That's not woke. That's the opposite of woke.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's even more potential hardcore. Potential sexual predator? I don't know.
All right. Let's get some reviews. That was very good. Very well done.
Despite having watched this like 4 months ago.
Yeah, that's amazing.
True. Was that all off the top of your dome or are you reading something?
That is all off the top of my dome. There's not really many descriptions online of the episode. So yeah.
That's why they call him Jamie the Ointment, because it's topical. It's off the top of his dome.
I'm always topical. And Patrick the Brains, right?
Yeah, I took over here.
And Brom the Brains, right?
We got three. We have two. We have one former brain and two new brains. Is that the dynamic?
I think, yeah. Everyone's brains except for me. I'm the ornament.
All right.
Should I start with the review?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. You know me.
I do.
So it's out of six, right?
It's out of six. Yeah. Although Kyle sent his out of five, so I'll have to read his and I'll just say his score and pretend it's out of six.
Nice. So out of five. Obviously, since I'm the brains, I watched, as I mentioned, 9 seasons of NCIS along with a lot of other garbage television from the 90s. What JAG episode 2 reminds me of a little bit is X-Files. Have you ever seen the pilot of X-Files?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I have. So really bad effects is like the main thing. Like really, really bad effects. X-Files has really bad effects for like 2 seasons. And then it gets kind of good. The effects are getting good about season 3. This is like exactly the same thing. I feel like if I watch like 3 seasons of this, the 3rd season, it's going to be great. And then if I watch like 7 seasons of it, then I'll be tired of it. And Harm is probably going to be like abusing people and making fun of women or something. That's like the MO. That's how all these shows kind of evolve. Eventually they kind of like flanderize themselves into the most absurd possible caricature. But I think JAG is going to be that NCIS level. So, and this episode I actually liked, I mean, again, does Grover, is that higher or lower? I think it's higher. So I think I'm going to go supremely entertaining from like a 90s television perspective. Like I actually can't even think of one I've seen that I think like as far as like not particularly great television is concerned. So I'm going to give it a 5.
Bam. Wow.
Good. Wow. Bam. That's pretty great.
Bam. So there we go.
All right. I'm going to read Kyle's as the second one. So Kyle Jag review. I was impressed by the quality of Jag episodes 1 and 2, and it was refreshing to see a new submarine story concept. And that's true. We don't really see this concept very often. The presidential stock footage and outrageous green screen use are hilarious. How on earth those scenes made it past editing is beyond me. And holy hell, they ripped off Hunt for Red October, getting Alex Baldwin onto the sub. All right, we didn't really mention that they have this whole scene of trying to get onto the sub, and it's all stormy, and they have trouble. And ultimately, Meg Austin, she like kind of releases herself to be able to swim to the submarine, and even the submarine captain's like, that was stupid. But she's like, whatever, I need to get on the sub. Not only once, but twice. Something, he has a typo in his thing that I can't read. Looks like rigid acting are its weaknesses. Ultimately, I've got an optimistic outlook for future episodes. 3.125 out of 5, but I think he means out of 5 inches with the extra bonus inch, getting up to 6. So 3.125 for him.
Okay.
I'm going to come in as the third one. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Grover, even there's no question. Grover is a positive. Think of Lukash. Lukash took probably, I can't even remember what score I gave it, probably a 12 because of Lukash. Because Lukash was amazing. And everything about it is great. I use Lukash in a story we wrote for BadMovieTwins.com. That's BadMovieTwins.com. I named someone in the story Lukash because just such a memorable character. Dirk Grover, got to remember the name. Because guess what? It's going to show up in my stories that I write, all my stories. And so I loved it. I loved him. The whole thing, the series as a whole, I enjoyed. I'm not sure I'd kind of like sit there and be like, time to watch another, you know, Jag episode, unless they promised me that there'd be a Dirk Grover level character every episode. Because otherwise, I wouldn't be as good into it as this one. But given Dirk Grover, I think I'm going to come in still a little lower than you. 5 seems a little aggressive. I'm going to go with a 4.5.
Very good. Very good scores. I'll bring up the rear here. I agree with everyone's sentiment here. I was pleasantly surprised watching this. I found it funny at times with some of the hijinks and some of the characters, some of the scenarios we found ourselves in. I think with it all just being made for television, it's hard to avoid some of that. It's unintentional camp at times. Sometimes it does feel kind of put on, but I think it was always successful and fun and funny. And then from a more serious side of things, I mean, it had unique storylines here, particularly in the episode we're reviewing, Shadow. Like, we haven't seen anything like this. You know, I think it's so easy to, you know, be like the poor man's version of one of the blockbusters of the age. You know, this could have easily been, you know, a Crimson Tide or Hunt for Red October kind of ripoff or whatnot. And it steered clear of all that and gave us a fresh sort of plot and storyline here. It might be in large part because of just how far-fetched this is. Same thing with the pilot, too, how far-fetched it is for the JAG officer to suddenly be flying shotgun in a war zone and whatnot. Like, that's not going to happen. But regardless, I'm willing to suspend the disbelief for a minute and enjoy it. And I did, even having to watch it a second time to refresh myself since we had such a long gap between recording there. It wasn't something I wanted to shoo off the screen. It was, I took it all in. And I would watch it a third time if we had another 4-month hiatus. But fortunately, that won't be the case. I do get to come in here with my score. I'm going to give it a 4.5 as well with you there, Jamie.
Very nice.
Nice.
All right. I'm going to do, I mean, the only trivia I'm going to do is just to alert everyone to the fact that there are multiple appearances of Jag in other shows. So we love our spinoffs. We love our, what they call crossovers. We love our tributes. And these have all of them in spades. So NCIS was a spinoff of Jag. It actually was a backdoor pilot. I think, Patrick, you mentioned that. 2-part backdoor pilot. when Commander Rab is arrested and later vindicated for the murder of Lieutenant Singer. And those are 2 episodes, Ice Queen and Meltdown, focused on the NCIS team that then transitioned into NCIS, which further had its own spinoffs, NCIS Los Angeles, NCIS New Orleans, and NCIS Hawaii. And guess what? This Wikipedia page is outdated because there's now a new spinoff. Patrick, do you know what that one is?
Wait, did you mentioned NCIS Los Angeles, though, right?
So yeah, oh, yeah. Los Angeles, New Orleans, Hawaii.
And the fourth one, NCIS Sydney. starting Sydney. This year. Wow.
Baby. Heading to Australia, baby. That was going to be on Paramount Plus, not a sponsor. And then, yeah, I think Harm and stuff like that has appeared in a bunch of them, including Los Angeles and stuff like that. So
there's a lot of crossover from there. Sydney, my hometown, Sydney, Ohio, and maybe like Miami Erie Canal, like hijinks.
Or the joke I heard. Amazing. The joke I heard online is NCIS Sydney Sweeney. It's just her show.
And then, okay, so after this series and I guess NCIS, I can't remember. Or NCIS was 2003. So before NCIS, Bella Serio had a different series, short-lived series, that aired in 2002 called First Monday, and it was about the U.S. Supreme Court. And a few of the characters from JAG showed up in that series as well, even though it only lasted, I think, one season. There was three episodes of the show that had a character that was a recurring character on JAG in the end. And then there are two other things listed here, which I think are hilarious. Yes, Dear did a Let's Get Jaggy With It episode where Greg's father, Tom, went to walk-on role on JAG. And amazing. So there are a bunch of people from JAG guest starred in there in character for Yes, Dear. And then Bette, a second episode of Bette Midler's short-lived sitcom Bette, titled And the Winner Is, has a storyline where a title character wins an award for guest starring in an episode of JAG.
I was waiting for you to say in Bette she has a walk-on role on JAG. I was like, how many walk-on roles? Yeah, every show has...
It actually seems like a funny concept. So in the sitcom Bette, the award-winning scene is shown where Bette is interrogating Harmon Rabb.
Oh my God, that's awesome. That's like the whole thing with Munch. You know the thing with Munch where it's like he started at homicide life in the street.
Yeah.
And then he went to Law and Order, and they keep on saying that he's a Baltimore detective in Law and Order. He's been in all the Law and Orders, but then every so often he'll pop up in other shows. He popped up in Arrested Development when they were trying to get some evidence against the father. They convince, was it Tobias, to make a craft project or something? Supposed to collect all the evidence, but anyways.
Anyways, all right, I'm going to do a quick Phantom Zone.
Engage the Phantom.
Phantom's engaged, sir.
So I was struggling with this a little bit. You guys got witness to that before we started the recording. But Jeffrey Dean Morgan, luckily, was in this one. He plays a weapons officer, as we mentioned. Beautiful man. And he was in Jonah Hex, which we've never watched for this. And Brahm, you said you seem to not even know what it was.
No, I've seen the name on paper, but I had no idea what it was.
Yeah, it's hilarious and horrible. I think there's like a snake man in it and stuff. It's pretty great. But in that, there's a kind of a submarine mechanism there. It's about the Civil War, and I think like the Confederates maybe have like a new submarine they're trying out or something, some submarine vehicle. So that shows up. I do recall this, although I can't guarantee the listeners that it's like a True Blue submarine. It's possible that it's like a submersible car or something that I'm forgetting about. I have no idea. Anyways, Michael Fassbender is in Jonah Hex. He's also in X-Men First Class, which has a submarine, if you remember. They like lift a submarine out of the water. And that's James McAvoy, who starred actually in, I think, our favorite movie, right? Submergence. I think that was our favorite one we've ever done.
Arguably least favorite. Arguably
our least favorite one. That one was horrible. Patrick, you never watched that, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's James McAvoy, Submergence. It takes place in, it's like in Ethiopia.
I know exactly what movie you're talking about, but I don't think I watched it.
Yeah, it is quite horrible. And so that from there, since we've watched it, almost certainly I had done a nice little cycle from there. It's no big deal from that point onwards. And so, that's a pretty horrible cycle right there. It goes from this to Jonah Hex, X-Men First Class, into Submergence, and probably a bunch of other horrible movies. So that should be a fun time. How about that?
How about it?
What do you think of that, I guess?
It's pretty good.
All right, I'm going to finish up my part right here with a little. You guys ready for a little quiz?
Yes.
Sure, I will try.
I think, Brahm, you're going to beat him.
Are we buzzing in? Is this how it's happening?
I usually do it alternately. Master. So I usually do the lower score gets to go first, gets to choose first. So it's going to be lawyering up on TV. So these are TV lawyers. 200, 400, 600, 800, and 1,000. Brahm, You came up with a 4.5. That's a lower of the scores.
What year? What year was the episode?
1999. Is that right?
Okay. So 90s.
No, sorry. Sorry. 2013.
Okay.
I was wrong. I thought I was choosing one.
I'm going to try to get that JAG question. Give me 600.
Ooh, 600. Patty Hughes, played by her, went through 5 seasons of damages, including those done to her ethics. What a weirdly phrased question. Or I should answer. Should say answer. Patty Hughes, played by her, so who played Patty Hughes, went through 5 seasons of damages, including those done to her ethics.
Who is Juliana Margulies?
Juliana Margulies is incorrect. Patrick, do you want to steal the $600 question?
I'll
Patty
try.
Hughes was played
why
by
do
who?
Why do I in my mind think... It's if it's damaging the ethics, it must be the younger person, and that person I'm never going to get. But I'm going to go, even though I know it's the other show, I'm going to go with Kerry Washington.
Kerry Washington is incorrect. That is the wrong show.
It's Scandal,
and
right?
It's not. No, this is that's Scandal.
Yeah,
damages.
It's not Glenn Close.
It is Glenn Close.
God damn it!
Wow.
Yeah, it is.
I
Glenn
knew
Close.
Glenn Close was the older one in Damages, but
yeah,
what a disaster!
I don't even know what Damages is. I'm not a trivia master, is what I'm learning.
I've watched 3 seasons of Damages.
I've watched no Damages, but I know Glenn Close is in it.
Actually, I think. Hold on, let me look and see.
Who is George Clooney?
But Glenn Clooney. I've seen three seasons of Damage. At a certain point,
that's
it moved
a good
from,
that's a good clone name, Glenn Close-ish.
Yeah. At a certain point, it moved from regular television to like a weird channel. It was on like Epic or I can't even remember. It was on something where it was like, wait, what? And she was still and Glenn Close was still getting nominated for Emmys, even though the show was like not on TV.
I thought Glenn Close was already unethical at the beginning of the show. I thought she was damaging her like younger person.
Yeah, so she was always unethical
then what
in,
is
the,
this,
in the show.
How is her ethics being damaged?
This is not, that would not have changed you getting, that's not why.
Yes, it would
oh,
have.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
I thought it was a younger person, even though I knew the older person was Glenn Close. So I had to try to guess what was a younger person. You know, who's the younger person?
Rose Byrne.
Ah, God damn it. It is Rose Byrne. All right. So it's my turn.
Yep. 200, 400, 800, or 1,000.
I go 1,000. I need to get my dignity back.
This man played both Law, a sage small-town sheriff, and Order, Wily Laura Ben Matlock. This man played both Law, a sage small-town sheriff, and Order, Wily Lawyer Ben Matlock. I guess they're just asking who played Matlock, I would assume.
They're saying who played Matlock, yeah.
What's that?
Bridges, I don't know. And it's not Bridges, but
it is Bridges. Not. It is not.
I don't know his name.
Any chance you can do it?
No, Dick Van Dyke.
So you're pretty close. So basically,
I know it's not. I know.
Dick I know Van Dyke, a sage small town sheriff would be Andy Griffith. Andy Griffith's show, and then he played Matlock, which is always like
that. Wait, his name is actually Andy Griffith.
Yeah, that's his name.
I thought that was his character.
I know the Andy Griffith show.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Oh, you've really blown
it. I was ready for it to be a name I didn't even know.
I would have guessed Andy Griffith, but it would have been a total flyer. I didn't actually think he was Andy Griffith.
All right, Brom, 200, 400, or 800.
I just need any of them at this point. Give me 200.
200. Juliana Margulies got out of TV nursing and into TV law as Alicia Florek on this drama.
This is what is Law and Order?
No, come on, man.
I don't know what she was in.
Patrick, do you know this one? Why am I so much better at this TV stuff than you guys?
Hey, second chance law firm. I get both those questions right. Repeat the question.
Juliana Margulies got out of TV nursing and into TV law as Alicia Florek on this drama. Juliana Margulies. That's all you need to know. That's what TV show is Juliana Margulies like best known for?
Boston.
Wow.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I literally actually don't know.
The Good Wife, guys.
I've never seen it.
I didn't know that was out in 99, to be honest with you.
No.
Oh,
he said 2013.
What
a disastrous segment.
It's disastrous. Patrick, 400 rages. Just for the love of God, choose the Jag one.
800.
Honestly, I didn't even know Juliana Margulies was in a Law TV show. I'm just like, she just looks like someone that would have been in a TV show. about whatever.
Richard Fish on this Calista Flockhart show. Okay. Objection, Your Honor. This is boring.
Ally McBeal.
Ally McBeal is correct. Thank God. All right. Now you guys have to buzz in.
I would have got for that one.
For the 400
Patrick
question.
Jag.
You are correct. It yes. is.
Nice, yes. Patrick.
Congratulations.
Awesome. Cool. Can I do my game?
Yes.
I think we can. Right. I think we
usually,
definitely.
Usually, because I invented the Jeopardy game, usually I try to steal from Jamie, but this time I didn't. Instead, I'm going to do a new game, which I stole from Doug Benson. No, wait, it wasn't Doug Benson. It was a Flophouse, a different podcast. So I'm going to name a couple films, and both of you guys have to guess what the IMDb rating for the movie is. And the key is that all these movies played on the same date that the show that we just discussed was on. And all right. So you have to try to get closer.
So Shadow played
on the same date.
Same time. Yeah,
yeah, okay. Yeah. And so the first one is Little Giants. So everyone knows Little Giants, I'll do the description. Little Giants, Rick Moranis and Ed O'Neill, brothers coach opposing PB football teams, slickly contrived family affair.
Slickly contrived? What does that mean? Slickly contrived?
That's what it says. New York Times has absurd descriptions. Slickly contrived family affair. So this is September 30th, 1995.
I'd call that arrogant.
Yeah, it was 8 p.m. on HBO. That's when Little Giants played, primetime HBO. So what rating do you think that had? I'll say Jamie. What rating do you think that had, Jamie? On IMDb. So the fans said, these are the people.
5.6.
Okay, he says 5.6.
I'm going to go 6.4. I'm not going to do this whole Price is Right with him, but...
That is a perfectly correct answer by Brahm. 6.4.
Oh my God.
The people love Little Giants.
I know. I was trying to balance that. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be so bad because people like Little Giants, but I guess I didn't realize how much it was in the wheelhouse of IMDb users, the user base.
It's also in my wheelhouse, Jamie. So
there we go.
So
I should have thought like Mighty Ducks. What would Mighty Ducks be? Yeah. Through the Roof.
Yeah. So. Yeah. 9.0. So
the Brahm's highest scoring movie.
Yeah, is up 1.10. The next one up on Cinemax at 8 p.m. So going right up against Little Giants is Silent Rage.
Mm.
So that's Chuck Norris, Ron Silver, just watched a Ron Silver film, Psycho and Mad Scientist, period. That's what they say. Psycho and Mad Scientist, period.
That's Chuck the Norris description? Film.
Yep. Brahm, you're going to go first this time because I think it gives it. The second person has an advantage, so since Jamie's down.
I don't know.
I'll go 5.2.
This is 5.2. What do the people say?
5.1.
Brahm's a savant. It's a 5.4. But
let's go.
Pick the wrong side of Brahm.
Found the wrong side of that one.
Yeah,
he's getting cheeky with it. I was saying I wasn't going to do this whole Price is Right thing, but now I know.
He was just going one side or the other. It is closest. So this is why the person you're up to zero. So you're going to go first again because I think it gives a major advantage when you just get it's a 50-50 shot basically. So and you're probably not going to get it exactly right. Okay, we're going back to a kids' movie.
Already done it once, Patrick.
It's true. Showtime, 8 p.m. You got Angels in the Outfield.
Oh, wow.
Starring Danny Glover and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's a family-geared baseball fantasy.
This is iconic. I think I'd say this is probably a little more iconic than Little Giants. So let's go 6.9.
Oh, my God. I'm going to go 6.8.
Yeah, it's 6.2. 6.9 is absurd. That is an absurd guess. I'm going to deduct a point from you for that. No
way.
You're up 2-1.
Angels in the Outfield is amazing.
So you're going to have to go.
I mean, no. We literally just watched Angels in the Outfield.
And it actually it is quite good until the back half when the angel comes down and goes, yeah, I can't interfere with championship games. Also, Tony Dan's over there, dead in 6 months. See you later, kid.
Yeah, he comes down and basically tells this kid, like, that guy has cancer. And the kid's like, what? And he's like, yeah, he's going to be dead in like 6 months. Anyway, see ya. And the angel disappears. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
Also, there's a whole thing where they reveal to the press that that the coach thinks angels are real, and ESPN picks it up as if this makes any sense. And then the owner of the team, the day of the championship to determine the pennant, calls in his coach, who's on like a 30-game win streak, and is like, I'm going to fire you unless you deny angels are real in a press conference. It's like, you can wait until the season's done. It's crazy.
And not only that, but like people would be like, eh, okay. Like, I don't, maybe like the coach thinks angels are real. It's yeah. Like, okay.
The guy like, knew from a supreme source, which was a little kid he overheard saying angels are real.
Crazy. Anyways. Yeah, that was my favorite part, is that it's like an anonymous source. It's like you're allowing this thing about someone, a coach thinking angels are real, being an anonymous source. It's an anonymously sourced story at that point. Because the person has to be fear for his safety. That's why it has to be anonymous in that sourcing.
Okay. So, Brahm, you're going to go again because you're still up. And we're going with Smokey and the Bandit 2. Burt Reynolds, Jackie Gleason, Sally Field. Salty and tangy. Same as before. Salty and tangy. So what kind of score do you think something that's salty and tangy?
Something that's salty and tangy comes in around like a 6.3 for me.
6.2. Yeah, it's a 5.2. Patrick, you're absolutely right.
That's not salty and tangy.
All right, okay. So I think I'm going first now. This
you
time.
Are definitely you're on a two game win streak here. So yeah. You're gonna go.
It's angels in the outfit. I got an angel. Angel's helping me right now.
And this is the win. This is the win. Unless you both decide that you have to guess the exact same score because this person definitely nailed it. Don't do that. Just someone pick higher or lower. Smokey and the Bandit Part 3 played at 1 a.m. on USA. Jackie Gleason now is the star. Jerry Reed, Miami to Texas, and Out of Gas, though they don't seem to know it. It's out of gas.
This is a little, I feel like this is, you know, I'm not going to explain it. I'll explain it afterwards why I make the guess, but because I think probably this is going to go Brahm's way at this point because he just chooses one side. But I'm going to go 4.9.
Oh, I wanted to go 4.8, so I think I'll stick with it. I'm going to go 4.8.
Yeah, you guys are way off because it is 3.5.
Oh, and see, this is the thing. I knew it was going to be way worse because and Smokey and the Bandit, definitely the first two would definitely because it has the stars in it. If you remove the star, it's like having a sequel to a Seagal film. A Seagal film is always going to have like an outsized score because it's Seagal and people like Seagal and they was just like bolster the score. But if you then take him out of it, it's just going to crater. But then I was thinking, well, maybe it's still Smokey and the Bandit. So maybe people are still giving it some score. So I thought 4.9
kind of like a nice balance. Tremors is always a 10.
Like Tremors will still be.
Should we test your theory? Let me look it up. What's it, sudden death? What do you think? What do you think the score of sudden death is?
2.5. Oh, what sudden death is? Yeah. Oh, I think sudden death is probably like a 5.7 or something.
5.8. Wow, you're really good. And Welcome to Sudden Death with Michael Jai White.
I think that's a 2.5.
No, it's a 4.3.
Really?
Yeah,
that's my point.
There's people who just love Michael Jai White, I think. I think there's like super fans who have to watch it. It is much worse. So, but you're right. You pull out the star and look at that. You lose.
But you can see Smokey and the Bandit. That was a really far drop for Smokey and the Bandit to the third one. Yeah, I guess the one thing I didn't count, I guess, was the fact that that's an old film. That Smokey and the Bandit 3 being old probably has a lower score in general. You know, in the end.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, because the people won't have like the random people won't pick it up and watch it these days.
Right.
So that's usually how you get the score to kind of go up.
And someday we will, but we haven't watched that. No. I've never seen it. Brahm, have you seen Smokey and the Bandit Part 3?
I haven't seen Smokey and the Bandit Part 1.
Neither have I.
I was actually just talking with someone the other day about this, about how Smokey... Oh, it was at a conference. And I was talking about Smokey and the Bandit and some of these other ones, and they were like... He was from Spain, so I was in Spain for this conference, and the guy I was talking to was from Spain. And I mentioned Smokey and the Bandit. I actually can't even remember why. And he's like, moonshining, bootlegging movies are really big in Spain. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, I don't know why. It's just like, that was the American films that we were watching all the time when I was like a kid. I was like, huh. Yeah, it's really strange.
Got any more games?
I've got a game for us.
Tube 3 ready to fire, sir.
Commence the countdown.
5, 4, 3.
give it to me. Ooh. I always have a game when you two are on together.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm putting you against each other this week. Sometimes you guys team up.
Oh, I do like when we team up because we have a beautiful mind when we combine them.
That's true.
Quiz. Yeah.
Like more like a Voltron, like a two-part Voltron.
Yeah, yeah. It's the sum is greater than the parts, but go on.
Well, things are spooky. I'm seeing doubles. We got clones on the brain. It's Halloween. The ghosts and ghoulies are on the town. I'm tapping in to the Google Frightgeist.
Oh.
To play a little family feud, putting brother against brother, twin against twin here. What we're going
to
do.
Just to ask a question. Is that a thing, the Google Frightgeist, or is that a term you just made? Okay, that's what I was going to say. I thought maybe you made that up, and I was like, that's amazing. You should trademark that.
It is amazing, and we got to give all credit to Google on this. But they have all the analytics on the most popular costumes nationally and locally.
Oh, geez.
We're going to the national list. I have the top 100. I think it was out like to 500 or even 1,000. But I have the top 100 most searched and implemented Halloween costumes this year, 2023. What we're going to do for Family Feud here, which is the older twin?
I'm the older twin.
Yes. Jamie, the older twin, is going to make his first guess. I want you to give me the most popular Halloween costume you can think of this year. I will award you points. The closer to number one you get, the more points you get. One is worth 100 points, for instance, and the 100th most popular is worth 1 point. So we're going to do it 5 guesses each. We'll give Jamie the first guess, and we're going to do it snake style. So Patrick will get to make 2, and then we'll go back and forth that way. So
okay.
you get the first draft pick. Patrick gets draft picks 2 and 3.
I got to decide which of the Barbenheimer viral side I want to go on. Is it Oppenheimer or Barbie that I pick? I'm going to go Barbie. That's my first pick, Barbie.
Barbie, fantastic guess. That is costume number one. That's a 100-point swing right there for Jamie out of the gate.
Amazing. Because I can't really think of it. Like, I would never even thought of that one. Oh, I know one that also came out this year. Jamie watched it on a flight. I'm going to go with Mario.
I think this is an amazing guess, Patrick. Let me preface that. It's probably not good that I'm prefacing it, though.
Oh, no.
I saw a million at our trunk or treat at my church. There was probably 7. I'm like, oh, this is the costume of the year. So that was the first one I looked up when I got on here. Mm. It was like 235.
Oh my God.
Absurd.
I was disappointed that he picked that because it was going to be my next guess.
So unfortunately, Patrick, even the Mario and Luigi combo is on the Frightgeist, and that was like 137. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, I would be tempted.
You do get a second guess. You get picks 2 and 3.
I'd be tempted to say that I should just go for the princess in that one, maybe that the girls are going for more. But I'm just going to retreat back. I can't think of really anything. I'm going to wait for Jamie maybe to give me some hints as to what's like – what the kids are all about these days because he's all on TikTok and stuff. So I'm going to go with Harry Potter because that's always like a pretty tried and true guess. People just throw on a cloak and they're going to go. So I'm going to go with that.
Hopefully I don't pick up too much typing here. I'm running a search. Unfortunately, it's not coming up in the top 100. I'm going to pull up the Frightgeist itself here, see where that landed. Harry Potter does rank 736.
Should I have gone with the new speaker of the house, maybe? Is that what you guys' minds?
Whatever, Mike something.
Yeah.
Mike Johnson. So unfortunately, a couple goose eggs from Patrick there. God, Jamie, you can put this one away.
God, yeah, yeah, so
you have two guesses now, Jamie.
So Patrick, I feel like there was a giant mistake made here. You should have retreated back to my guess and basically said Ken.
Oh, yeah, I guess I didn't even think about that. You could have multiple things. But then I thought about it because of Barbie. Ah, I'm an idiot.
Let's see if we have some Ken action. We have chicken.
Is there no Ken?
It doesn't show up in my top 100.
Wow.
We'll retreat to the Frightgeist itself. Does not rank.
Does not rank. You get negative points.
God.
I'm back in it.
Unfortunately.
Oh, my God.
Struggling after that early Barbie guess.
Back half of a horse. Is that your next guess?
I mean, yeah, I should, you know, if I had known Ken wasn't going to do it, I would have done Oppenheimer as like the joke, the Barbenheimer Oppenheimer combination being the two things that you do. Huh. This is kind of an interesting. This is a top 100.
I know. It's crazy. What are the big books? Like, they're gonna be kids' things, right?
What is the name? What is the name of the bad guy in Scream?
Ghostface or something?
Ghostface. Ghostface. That's my new one.
Ghostface. Right. I know makes the list. That is a great guess.
Good one.
50. Good for 51 points, Jamie.
You know, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna go back in time a little bit. You remind me of the person who's in Scream 5 and 6. I think Jenna Ortega, is that her name?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So she plays Wednesday Addams. I'm hoping that if Wednesday Addams doesn't show up, maybe I can get anything for any Addams Family character. But I'll go with Wednesday Addams. It's like
Wednesday Addams, specifically named. Excellent work, Patrick. The sixth most popular costume this year. 95 points.
Very good. Very good.
All right. What else is there? I mean, you got Stranger Things.
I mean, this is going to go all night because we have to get all 100, right?
Yeah, this is crazy. No,
you
really
each get
good
five
content.
Guesses. So.
yeah, I can't. Now this, I have to go real quick. Is like the problem. I'm trying to think of what else people like, you know, watch on television. The problem is like Marvel's kind of petering away. Would people dress as Loki? No, right? I mean, there's Star Wars people, I suppose. But those are pretty elaborate costumes, so that like seems ridiculous. Can you even say Andor? Was it the Andor costume? I'm gonna go with
the most adult Star Wars content of all time. It's just that's what the kids are dressing up as.
God dang. What are the kids into these days if not
Andor?
No, if not. Like Wednesday Addams, I got that one. But what other TV shows? How can I name a Stranger Things character when I don't know their names? Like that's the problem.
I was gonna actually ask the exact same thing. Can I just say the word Stranger Things?
Yeah.
I mean, I told Jamie Ghostface is the Scream guy. Right. Stranger Things, you have I don't know who you're looking for. 11 is the female protagonist.
No one's gonna shave their head. I'm gonna go back to Princess Peach. No, the what other films came out this year? An Avatar.
Navi.
A Navi. Generic Navi. I'm going with that because I can't hold this off any longer. This podcast is already too long. What?
It's all right. People are here.
Generic Navi.
258, Patrick. Yeah. That is out.
not that bad. the better joke would have been DiCaprio's name in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Right. So Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer's the pick.
Oh, my God. All right, Jamie, you have your final two guesses now. You have a comfortable, 64-point lead.
Yeah, but if I manage to pull out one high-level pick, I might be in, like, Flynn. Flynn?
I'm gonna go while I think of another one. I'm gonna go Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer.
No.
I saw some articles about Oppenheimer being a popular costume, but
not there.
I'm not seeing it on the zeitgeist.
God dang.
Oh, here we go. 333 angel numbers.
Actually not bad.
But not worth any points there. Sorry, Jamie.
And I'm going to go Black Panther.
Ooh, okay. That should get some points.
You think so?
I think so.
Kids love Black Panther.
I was thinking of doing Marvel stuff, but I don't think so.
Is it not there?
I'm not seeing it.
Oh, you made me forget my thing.
240, Jamie.
Whoa.
You made me forget. I had a really good one. Things? I had a really good one. And now I'm really annoyed because I just...
All right. He's within striking distance.
You made me forget it with with your terrible guess.
You trail 95 to 151.
You made me forget it with your terrible guess. I'm not joking. Like, I actually forgot it.
Was it movies? Was it TV? What did it have to do with?
I think it was movies.
So far, Jamie scoring on Barbie and Ghostface. Patrick coming in with Wednesday Addams.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Now, I was thinking along the lines of animals. Like, kids went, oh, I might now remember. Thank God. I'm going to go with a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Oh, very good.
Come on, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
You might have to search them individually.
It might be.
Okay. Interesting. Do you have to choose one? Mikey is the best one.
So yeah, Michelangelo. That's definitely the best one. You have to add in, also search for the painter. You have to add both of them in. I'm just going.
Although, I guess the only thing is whether they like, yeah, I don't know. Donatello is a popular one too, but.
Is he purple?
I'm not getting any of them.
Not getting any of them. Wow.
Turtle, Ninja Turtles. Here we go.
There we go.
886.
What? How is this possible?
Little
this website is bullshit.
Dressing his little,
never mind.
Put on a mask.
You need to take over.
This is absurd.
The Halloween fright case. Right.
But once I name off even like 10, I can
is,
name
is
off
one of
100,
them a ghost?
You'd be like, oh, of
is one of them
course.
A princess?
Just name off the top
princess
10.
Princess is number 2.
No.
Say princess.
Spider-Man, yeah. Number 3.
Oh, I was
Witch.
Thinking.
Damn it.
Spider-Man's a better one, yeah. That is good.
Witch, number 4. Fairy, 5. Where
just
Adam,
generic
6.
Ones?
Dinosaur 7, Cowboy 8, Ninja 9, Bunny 10, Rabbit
back of a
11.
Horse.
Bunny
back
and
back
Rabbit.
Of a horse.
Back where's of horse? Horse? Search yeah, horse. Where's horse?
Searching horse. Horse is 65, good for 36.
I could have got it with horse.
I'll just read them. Princess Peach, though, 13. You should have went with it.
Oh, my God.
I would have won with my Princess Peach if I had just not remembered
Pirate.
Ninja Turtle.
Clown, pumpkin, Batman, mermaid.
How does Princess
Batman.
Peach get so much, and then
Batman,
Mario
yeah.
get like nothing?
I know, it's crazy.
It's the female, because like I feel like girls seem to be more like focused on specific things. So Wednesday Addams, Princess Peach, Barbie, but then you have things like Ken and Mario, and guys are like, no, maybe they want to be more scarier things than that. I don't know.
Here's a few I was sure you guys were gonna guess.
Wait,
Taylor
wait,
Swift.
What are some? Oh, that's a good one. What are some male skewing costumes that are in the top 20?
Okay, Spider-Man was 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, Spider-Man, yeah.
But you said specific named, like proper
yeah, yeah.
noun?
Yeah, proper, yeah, yeah. Proper names.
Like Spider-Man.
Okay, yeah, Spider-Man 3. Actually, it is quite a while until we run into another one.
See, we should have realized it's
disparate. I think
Chucky.
It's,
Chucky at 30.
Chucky's creepy.
It does,
but okay.
It does just say generic Star Wars at 29. I don't know if we've run into
generic Star Wars.
There are individual characters, though, too, because we do get Darth Vader at 53.
I was naming these things, just being like, yeah. I don't know, like a generic Star
well,
Wars.
Once we got to the point where I started to think, like, we did.
Bowser. At 42, that's fun.
Bowser,
that
fun. Interesting. I was thinking
actually
Bowser.
I was gonna say yeah. once you said Mario, I was gonna say Bowser. Like
they
I was like, oh, he's
villains.
Gonna take Mario.
They want to be villains.
It's
they
true.
Pennywise at 51.
It's scary and villains. The boys want to be.
Yeah, they want to be scary and villains.
Anakin Skywalker 54.
Well, next year villain.
What? Wow.
Buzz Lightyear at 70.
Villain.
Shrek at 71.
Arguable.
Miles Morales at 75.
That's sorry,
Spider-Man.
What was that?
Oh.
Miles Morales.
Otherwise known as Spider-Man. Absurd.
Spider-Man.
What's the difference between Miles
like
Morales
a little,
and Peter
a little
Parker
exclusionary.
When they
yeah,
have their costume on? I don't understand.
That's true.
Just seems exclusionary. I'm not saying he's not Spider-Man, but he is.
But now you guys know for next year. So we'll have to have you on for the Halloween episode next year.
Once we finished, and I was thinking like we only got a couple of the top 10, I was like, oh, I should have been saying
no,
like
we played
fairy
it right. No,
and,
we played it right.
And princess.
It's so
witch.
Much more fun to try to guess like the weird specific ones.
Wednesday Addams
time,
was a really good one.
Next time you should only go through and you should cut out the generic ones and only have the
my favorite guess was Avatar.
Generic Navi. Generic Star Wars, generic Navi.
I do have to give myself props because I nailed the pop culture.
You did.
Yeah. Even if I got him first, fusion. you would have done Barbie and I would have been like, okay. I'm an idiot because I wouldn't have known what to do. So
good old Barbie.
And then your scream thing has led me straight to Wednesday Addams. I wouldn't have got it without your scream either.
So. I only knew that because one of the people I work with was talking about what their kids were dressed up as. And the daughter had some regular costume. And it's like, and my son wants to be Ghostface from Scream. I'm like, your son, because his son was like 11. Your son has watched Scream? He's like, no, he just wants to be Ghostface.
So funny.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, right. Very good, guys. Congratulations, Jamie, on your 151. Point win there. You can you can pour yourself a shot of Bacardi 151 after that.
Bacardi 151,
to celebrate. But that concludes my Google Frightgeist Family Feud.
Excellent!
Wow,
excellent
that was,
episode too.
That was I very. So. I was spookified up the wazoo by that. So thank you, bro.
I thought all our games were very fun. Thought it was a fun episode. I'm happy to be back in the saddle. We promise we won't make you wait. that long ever
again. We can't promise cartoons. That, Brom.
Cartoons. And Brom, you don't have to be on the cartoon episode. Well, me and Jamie will just watch cartoons. We just discuss these garbage cartoons.
I want to watch some garbage cartoons.
Oh, cool. Then we can do, I think the Jackie Chan animated show has a summary episode. So.
All right. Wasn't it like Ruby Spears or something like that? That had like 11 of them?
Yeah. At one point I looked at they had 30 shows, and I managed to find and confirm that 10 of them at least had summaries in them, including it was like the Cowboys of Mu Mesa, which is where aliens who look like cows come down and live on Earth in the Wild West, and they get into a wooden submarine and go underwater, and I'm just staring at it like, what's happening right now?
I want to watch that right now.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, listeners.
Online, the Hulk Hogan show / TV movie series or whatever, Thunder Mountain or Return to whatever it was called, it claims online there's a submarine, and I swear to God, I watched at 1.5 or 2x speed multiple episodes just trying to find the submarine. So far, no luck, but that's amazing. At some point I'll find that, and then we will watch those episodes because they are hilarious and even funnier if you watch them at 2x speed.
This could be a sick joke by one of our fans that are like, "Ooh, I'm gonna plant this seed on Wikipedia."
And I almost forgot. Okay, this is how we're gonna end this episode. But I just want to mention one of the top movie podcasts in the world called the Rewatchables. Do you listen to this, Brom? Rewatchables?
I've not heard of it. No, you were telling me about it. I've not seen it or heard it rather.
So Rewatchables, on their latest episode, they mentioned how they wanted to do Hunt for Red October and how they were contemplating a submarine month. You know, where they watch movie blog. Submarines. They were going to redo Crimson Tide, which they've already done. They're going to do Hunt for Red October, and they are going to do Das Boot. But then they were like, we'll just have to figure out a fourth one. So, Brom, I did want to ask this question, and Patrick, you can chime in too. But if they were going to do a fourth one, what would you say Rewatchable should do as their fourth?
What were the three you said? Das Boot?
Crimson Tide, Hunt for Red October, and Das Boot were the three they'd have as the three. They need a fourth one for their submarine thing, which is going to blow us out of the water because obviously they have a million listeners and we have what, 200 bots or whatever. So,
my bots in Kazakhstan. U571 obviously jumps out as an iconic one.
I think they probably say that's not good.
I
agree.
It wouldn't be. I don't think it'd end up being my pick.
You have to go. You have to go earlier, right?
I think you got to go classic.
Like they don't do. They don't do many. They don't do classic. That is true. Actually,
they don't really do classic. They've rarely done anything before 1970 in the series. So you'd be looking post 1970 probably. But I was thinking it's harder than you'd think to figure out what you would have as your
iconic.
I have two suggestions, but one: do you think it's at all possible that they'll bring on one of, I can't remember his name, but they'll bring on someone to discuss Gerard Butler in Hunter Killer.
Ooh, that's not a bad idea. Hunter Killer is not a bad one, yeah.
It's like a bad movie, but isn't that bad? We maybe should reassess. I don't know.
You could also imagine
something in NCIS Sub Rosa.
No, it is possible. Singing along the same lines, it is possible that they would do like the Meg for it or something.
Oh, I think they'll do the Meg. I think you're right.
Yeah,
because it's possible Sean Fennessy on that show has mentioned really likes the Meg.
I would say Greyhound.
Oh, well, see, the problem is they need something. They'd probably be like, it needs to be something that you would.
It's going
to
be the Meg. I'm 100% correct. It's going to be the Meg.
Or NCIS Sub Rosa.
Yeah.
2010 Moby Dick.
Thank you for listening to Submersion. Don't forget to subscribe for new episodes every Thursday. If you like what you heard, please leave us a rating wherever you listen. Want to interact with us? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We also love to get messages from all of you. If you have a suggestion, a comment, or just anything you'd like to share, please email us at macestudios@gmail.com.